Okay, we're holding on Kofir Dalet on the bays. Four lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday, we started discussing the question of in what circumstances do we say that if a woman comes and says her husband has died, in what circumstances do we believe her, and in what circumstances are we concerned that there might be bidded dummy that she assumes based on the circumstances that he may have died but without solid proof. We discussed yesterday, so the Mishnah talked about the case where the world was at peace and she says he died naturally versus when there was a war going on. And then we discussed, the Gemara had started discussing the matter of war and also the matter of a famine. Continuing on that topic, Mapolis Hareo Kimochama, when there's buildings collapsing, then it's the same as a war. Da'amr b'didami, because then again, she may assume that her husband is dead when really he's not. And there's a discussion, are we talking about over here, the Marshal, for example, says that we're talking, Rashi mentions two possibilities. One is that one particular house collapsed. The other is that there was a general collapse of houses. There was an earthquake, for example, or a hurricane or something that knocked down many houses. And Mefarshim discussed, the Marshal and other Mefarshim discussed, might there really be a difference between those two? If one of them collapsed, maybe there's less reason to say that she would think that she wouldn't stick around to look after him. Whereas if there's a general collapse, yeah, then like we said yesterday with warfare, she's going to want to get out of there as fast as possible.
It appears that it's not just a matter of what she thinks, it's a matter of her underlying intention.
No, so we said the Mishnah had started talking about the idea that she's at peace with her husband. We're not talking about a case when she's already having marital difficulties and might want to get out of it. So far we're dealing with the case where she's at peace with her husband. So then it's just a question, is she likely to make assumptions? Is she likely to say, you know what, I didn't bother sticking, is she likely to think to herself, you know what, I can't be bothered to stick around. What if I get killed? What if I get whatever? But I'm pretty sure he died, or will it be that she looks after him and until he dies, and so she knows it for sure? So we're saying in the case of a collapsed house, it's the same as war, because she won't necessarily want to stick around. She doesn't want to get trapped in the rubble either. So therefore we can't necessarily assume that she knows for sure the facts.
What about Migru in this
situation? Migru, we're going to get to in a minute. Shiluach nechashim v'akrab marim kimochama. On the other hand, if there was a plague of snakes or scorpions that were biting people, and the Rambam adds that most of the people who were bitten by them are killed, also harayim kimochama, then it's also like warfare. Same idea. Again, she's not going to stick around for fear that she gets bitten. She's going to assume that most people have been bitten, they're killed, therefore her husband probably was too. To Amra b'didami, again, because she might say other people have gotten killed, probably he got killed also. Dever, what about if there's an epidemic going on? Amri lo hareo kimochama, but amri lo ke'eno kimochama. So some say that it is like war, some say it's not. Amri lo hareo kimochama, do amri b'didami. Because again, just like in warfare, she might assume that he died, because most people, when a person's missing for a while during wartime, you assume that they've probably been killed. Same thing, she'll figure if she saw that her husband had caught the disease, then he's probably dying from it also. Hello. So therefore, she might assume the dummy, and she might not know for sure that he died. Others say, though, that it's not like a war, because we rely on the expression that people say, there was an epidemic going on for 7 years, and yet nobody died, not in their time. Meaning, in other words, basically people realize that an epidemic doesn't necessarily kill people before their time. When it's a person's time to go, they go, but not necessarily before that. And not necessarily is that true either, but that was a popular expression. So therefore, not necessarily is this woman automatically going to assume that because there was an epidemic and now her husband is missing, that necessarily he's dead. Maybe not. So therefore, we should be able to rely on what she's saying. Now comes your question about Migri. They had a question as follows. All this time we've been talking about where we knew based on independent evidence, it was on Facebook or whatever, that there was a war in such and such a place. And she comes and says, you know, we were there and we got caught in the middle of it. What happens if we didn't know, Bichlal, that there was a war going on there? And she comes and says, you should know there was a war, and so we only know about it from her. And she's saying, my husband died. Mahu, then what do we say? Mi amrin and mala l'shaker. Do we say in that case that she has no reason to lie? Dibaya amra shalom ba'olam. She could have just said that there was peace, and then the Mishnah said that she'd be believed. So this is, mala l'shaker is another name for migui. Effectively, we're saying, in other words, instead of making a weaker claim, where she's saying, yes, there was war, and normally in wartime situation, everybody just runs hither and yon, and not necessarily what I had stuck around, but I, Davka, did. When she could have used a stronger argument, there was no war, and he just died naturally. She could have said there was peace in the world. Or maybe not. Given to Ichsika, since now we have a chazaka, since now we have a chazaka based on what she said, then already we have to assume that once she's saying there was war, then we have to take her at her word. Okay, well, if there's a war, then it means that people don't necessarily stick around. She might say based on her assumption rather than knowing the fact. Well, I also malu l'shaker mara chazkase, and then this malu l'shaker, this migui, can't come and undo that chazaka. Which one thing is, Tosfos and various other Rishonim point out that one way of looking at it is, it's not so much, I mean, we're not necessarily accusing that this woman is blatantly going to lie, that we have to say Mala L'Shaker, but Bita Dummy is kind of a lie. Like we learned yesterday with the story of Rava, where her husband, where she said that her husband died in a famine. It's more of a toast, though. I mean, she knows, or she should know, that Beis Din is only going to accept her word if she knows for sure that her husband is dead. Here, she assumes that, you know, based on the circumstances that her husband is probably dead, and she kind of is willing to bend the facts a little bit. You know, it's, you know, 99% chance that he's gone. Yes, there's 1% that not, and then I'll be subject to all the penalties, but maybe, you know, She might be willing to do that rather than having to stay in Aguna. So therefore, if we were to say that, then we might apply Mala L'Shaker, that she has not, once she's saying, so Rashi points out like this. From the Mishnah, we would say if there was Shalom in the world, then fine. Then there's no problem. The difference is that in the Mishnah, when we said that we believe her, means that she said that he died, means she says he died without specifying how. Whereas here, when she's saying there was war, the question is, if we say we believe her, then we would have, in order to believe her, she would have to say, you know what, there was war, but he died naturally in his bed. So there wasn't a confusion, there wasn't a circumstance where I would have had to run away. I know for sure what happened. And then again, this is the Mala L'Shaker issue, is that maybe he really was missing in war, and she figures, you know what, dead is probably dead. He's probably dead no matter what. So I might as well, you know, get away with saying that he died naturally in order that they'll believe me more. Do we say that or do we say no? Tashma, a braita says, if the woman comes and tells us Ishinu aleinu bayit Ishinu aleinu ma'ara, that they smoked out a house or a cave on us, meaning we were in a house or we were in a cave, and people came and lit a fire over there to burn down the house or smoke us out of the house or the cave. Who messed on Nini Selti? And she says, my husband died and I got saved. Ain't an amenas, then we don't believe her. Now, before she came and told us what happened, we didn't know about it. It was one particular house or one particular case. And if we're saying we don't believe her, then obviously it means we don't apply the migri. Otherwise, if we applied the migri, we should say that we believe her. She didn't have to say that they there was any smoke or anything. She could have just come and told us her husband died naturally, and then we believe her. The answer is shiny husband. It's different over there. It's not necessarily a matter of migri. The reason why we don't believe her, because we tell her, you know what, the difference is, just as a nest happened to you, meaning that you Bashkacha Pratis, got saved from the smoke and you got out safely, so to him also. You're assuming that because the house burnt down and there was full of smoke, that nobody else could have survived, but you see, you did. So who says your husband didn't also? That's not a question of a migui then. That's especially the Rashba points out, the difference is, in the case of Mochama, it's a widespread thing. Here you're talking about two people. When it's a widespread thing, fine. The odds are that, you know, most people get killed and when war is surrounding them, so therefore maybe there's a stronger reason to assume that she's telling the truth and maybe to apply to Migri. Whereas over here it's just two people. If she was saved, there's no reason for her to assume Davka that her husband, the only other person in that house, got killed. And therefore we can't accept that. Nothing to do with the Migri or not, though. Tashma, come, let's try to bring another proof. What if she says Naflo Alein Ovdikachavim or Naflo Alein Lissim, Goyim or bandits attacked us? Who met Venitzalti? He died and I was saved. Nemenis. Then we say we do believe her. Well, again, that's the equivalent of Mochama. That's the equivalent of her coming and telling us about a Mochama that we didn't know about until now, and we say we do believe her. The answer is no. Hasam Kedir Rav Idi. There we have reason to believe her based on what Rav Idi says. That when it comes to goyim or bandits, unlike up until now we were talking about either natural disasters, well not really, the smoking out house is not really a natural disaster, but whatever. The smoke doesn't distinguish between one person and another.
A regular mochama
also, the stones, arrows and then spears and whatnot fall pretty indiscriminately. That was why we said yesterday, if she sees that her husband was hit by an arrow, she's going to get out of there as fast as possible so another arrow doesn't hit her. But when it comes to goyim or bandits, no, they do in fact treat men and women differently. Kedir Ravidi, like Ravidi says, the Amr Ravidi, Isha Klei Zayna Alel, a woman has her weapons on her, which means, it's two different, the two different explanations of what that means. One, the same Gemara is brought in Avodah Zarah, Rashi and Tosfos discuss it over there. One is that Rashi says over there it means that the goyim are not going to kill her because they're going to want to save her to use them for snus. So therefore, yes, there's more reason to assume that they would have killed her husband and spared her. The Chacham Tzvi points out about that in one of her Trubas, I mean, in that case, she's not going to want to stick around either. Why should she want to be raped by them? But okay, the answer is, nevertheless, since she knows that at least her life is safe, she might indeed be more willing to stick around to make sure her husband is dead so she doesn't stay in Aguna. She might be violated by the Goyim. You know, under the circumstances, she's less concerned about that than about the possibility that she might end up staying in Aguna without having solid proof that her husband died. Anyway, that's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos' explanation is basically men fight, women don't. She's not a fighter, therefore the goyim are more likely to spare her in warfare. You have all the time, you know, they kill the combatants and spare the non-combatants. This would be the same kind of thing. So therefore, again, you have no proof from that for the more general case of a general war when people are being killed right and left, whether we should believe her when she herself is telling us about the war. Okay, so the Gemara continues with another case. Hahu gavra de b'shila hilula itlinuna b'nei gnani. There was a certain man who at the end of his wedding, a fire broke out in the chasana house. We've learned before about the concept of chuppah, the way they used to do things in those days. We learned about this in Sukkah in particular, that it wasn't like nowadays where the chuff and kala, you know, they go and start living in their new apartment or whatever, but they go every night to a different family or whatever for Sheva Brachas. In those days, the way it usually worked was the chuff and kala spent the whole first, their whole first week after their wedding in a private little house of their own, sort of like a honeymoon. We learned in Sukkah, for example, that therefore they're potter from Sukkah because you can't expect them to be sitting in an open area. Sukkah doesn't usually have a fourth wall where they're not going to have privacy. So here they had this kind of little house for themselves for the week, and a fire broke out there. So his wife comes out yelling, Chazu Gavroi, Chazu Gavroi, come, look, my husband is getting burnt. Also, they came, Chazu Gavra Charucha de Shadi, they found a burnt body lying there, Upista the other de Shadia, and they also found a burnt hand lying there. Savar of Chiba Oven Lamema, Hainu Ishnu Alena Bais, Ishnu Alena Mara. So Rav Chiba Oven thought to say, this is exactly the case of the case with the smoke, where we said that we don't believe her to say that she got away and he didn't. He or she got away, we should assume maybe her husband got away also. Who's the person? The Gemara is going to get to in a minute. Somebody else maybe came to save him. Right. Part of the issue is also Mefarshim discussed here at quite a bit of length what Rashi means over here and various other Mefarshim have what to say on it. Also, are we talking about that the body was missing a hand, so that you might assume that this hand belongs to the same body, or are we talking about there's a whole body with two hands plus another hand? Anyway, Amar Rava, Midami, so Rava says, how could you compare it? Hasam like Amar Chazu Gavroi, Chazu Gavroi. First of all, in the case of the smoke, She's not yelling. She's not yelling. Look, my husband is getting burnt. So she might. She at that point, yes, he might have gotten away. Whereas in this case over here, she knows obviously he's there in the fire. And second of all, we have a body over here. We have a body and we have a hand. We should assume that the body belongs to the chazan. What would Rav Chiya Oven answer back to that? He would say, "Gaber Charucha D'Shadia." You could say that the body that's lying there, Eime Inish Achrina Atalatzuli. You could say that it was somebody else who came to try to save him. Va'achalti Nura, and the fire burned him also. Upis the other D'Shadia, and as far as the hand that's lying there, Nura Itliya, it was the fire burnt off the hand. The Isulad Bay Muma. And meanwhile, her husband developed a mum. So again, different mefarshim discuss over here. Does the Gemara mean to say that the husband developed a different mum? The fire burned not his hand, because the assumption might be if the fire was intense enough to burn off his hand, he probably didn't survive. No, we're talking about some other mum. He was disfigured by the fire. His face was burned or whatever, not badly enough to kill him, but badly enough to disfigure him. Umachmas kisufa also va'arik la'alma, and then he's embarrassed, so he went and ran away. So not necessarily, even though you have a body plus a hand over here, not necessarily can we assume that the body belongs to the husband, and the hand also we can't assume belongs to the husband either. Or, according to another way of looking at it, what we're saying is the hand might have come from the husband. Yeah, the mum that we're talking about is that he lost his hand and now he's embarrassed. And different other mafarshim talk about that, but that may not be what it means over here, because if that's the case, if he lost his hand in the fire, he's not running away, he's going and looking for treatment. He's not running away out of embarrassment. Anyway, the point is that the point is the Gemara is saying that it's not the same thing. And now that's the end of that discussion, and the Gemara pretty much leaves it unresolved. This question of whether so we're leaving it unresolved. This question of whether we apply the migui or not. So the Rambam accordingly paskins that she shouldn't remarry in that case. If she comes and tells us there was a war in such and such a place, or the various cases that we had over here, and I survived it, my husband didn't, we shouldn't allow her to remarry because of the suffix. But if she did, we don't force her to get divorced.
Because in other words, if it's true, hundreds of people are going to come and say there's a war afterwards. It's not like
It depends. I mean, you know, it's not necessarily hundreds of people are going to come. I mean, if it's a place where later on Amud Beis, we're going to talk about the idea that there's a difference between places where there's commonly people going back and forth from point A to point B. Not necessarily are we talking about such a place. You know, in modern times, yeah, if a war breaks out someplace, you're soon going to find out about it. It's going to be all over the news. But in those days, not necessarily. Okay, Ibayalahu, now they had another question. Eid Echad B'mochamamahu. Till now we've been talking about the woman's own evidence, where she herself comes to Beis Din and says, my husband died. Now what about instead of her herself, you have one aid, but it's during wartime. So ordinarily we would say, as we've learned before and as we'll learn later on, that one aid we do accept. But when it's during wartime, again, you have the question of when it's a time of confusion, when everybody's running around, is he necessarily telling the facts? No, well, she herself is not kosher la'edus anyway, first of all, because she's a woman, and second of all, because she's negeh b'davar. No, obviously, if there are two Edom came, who are two kosher Edom, there's no question that it's fine. But here we're talking about there's only one Ed. So the question is, now we learned yesterday, and we learned previously when the Gemara, when we talked about this in the 10th parak, that there's two major reasons, b'chlal, why we allow a woman to remarry based on one aid. One was because we said that milsa davidu l'gluy l'mashakri, and she's something that eventually is going to be found out, people don't lie about. And so here, the aid's not going to want to lie and say the husband is dead, if he really isn't, because he doesn't want him to show up, and then he'll be exposed as a liar. Or We said the reason was because isha daiko mitzvah, because we can rely that the woman is not going to want to suffer from all the penalties that we talk about there in the 10th Perek, and therefore she's going to be very careful in checking out the facts before she hurries and remarries. So the question is basically now, which of those two reasons is the more important one? Taima de Edech ad Meheman, do we say the reason why one witness is believed, Mishum de Milta David Gluyahula Meshakir, because we say that something that a person, something that eventually is going to be found out, a person's not going to lie about, Hachanami Le Meshakir. So even though now we're talking about in war, he's also not going to lie. He's not going to be so quick to say that he died just based on an assumption without making sure the guy is really dead, because he doesn't want to be exposed as a liar. Or maybe the reason why we normally believe one aid is because we rely on her to check out the situation very carefully. Whereas in our case over here, it says here in brackets, given to Zimna de Sanyale, because she doesn't like him, but on the side over here it says that the Girsa instead should be Loidaiko Mintzava. She may not be so careful. It takes out the word Loidaiko Mintzava. It takes out the word given to Zimna de Sanyale. It's not a question of her liking him or not. It's just because it's wartime, and she assumes, as most people would assume during wartime, that somebody who's missing in action is probably dead. Therefore, she might not carefully check out. She might again assume. She might again follow an assumption. So what? In other words, the idea is that we're saying that the aid according to the first way of looking at it, the aid is not going to rely on any bit of dummy because he doesn't want to be exposed as a liar. According to the second one, according to the second way of looking at it, it's true also. He's not going to say bit of dummy. He's not going to say Eidos unless he's certain of it. But the woman is not going to check things out as carefully, since there's raglayim l'davar, since Tosfos explains, since usually anybody who's missing in wartime is presumed dead, she may not check out the facts carefully enough to make sure that the aid really saw it with his own eyes rather than assuming. So, Amid Amid Bachama, Toshma, come on, we can bring a proof from the next to last Mishnah of Amasech. Amid Abakiva, Kshiyaradti l'Nahavda l'Ela Abba Shana, when I went to Nahavda to declare an Ibriyar. Now, Nahavda is in Chutzal. Usually, an Ibriyar is not supposed to be declared outside Eretz Yisrael. The calendar that we use nowadays was set up by Hillel HaNasi 1600 years ago, who lived in Eretz Yisrael. And if he hadn't set it up, we wouldn't be able to set it up now. The Rambam has a whole long discussion about it in Sefer HaMitzvot in explaining that the calendar we use, well, the Rambam's shita actually is a little different. The Rambam doesn't mention anything about Hillel HaNasi. He says the calendar that we use nowadays is based not really on our own calculations. It's based on the fact that in Eretz Yisrael, they make these calculations and declare the month and the Hebrew year. And the Ramban has a different shita. The Ramban explains that has nothing to do with the people of Eretz Yisrael per se. It has to do with Hillel HaNasi 1600 years ago. Anyway, whatever. You're usually not supposed to declare Ibriyar an outside Eretz Yisrael. In this case, though, there was a situation where wherever Rabbi Akiva was, there's nobody as great as him. He was the greatest Talmid Chacham of his time, and he had to go to Chutz La'aretz because it wasn't being allowed. The Romans or whoever it was weren't allowing it in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he had to go to Nahavda. Tosfos also discusses the possibility that maybe we don't mean here to actually declare an Ibriyar, just to make the calculations, whatever it was, anyway. So when I went down to Nahavda to declare an Ibriyar, Matzasi Nechemya Ish Beis Dli, I found a Talmid Chacham named Nechemya from Beis Dli, Va'omali, and Nechemya tells me like this, Shamaiti, I've heard Shein Masi Nasi Isha Be'ot Yisrael Apiyed Echad El Rabbi Yehuda Ben Bava. The only Tana in Eretz Yisrael who allows a woman to be remarried based on one aid is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. The Namtiloy, and Rabbi Akiva says, I told him, yes, Kein Advarim. That's indeed so. Amali, Nechemya tells me, Emer Lahem, Mishmi, tell the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael in my name, Atem Yodim Amadina Azum Shoveshes Begayosis. Now you know that this country is all confused with soldiers, there's a war going on. But you should know, Kach Mekublani Rabbi Gamliel Azokin Shemasina Isha Al Pied Echad. You should know, I've received the Kabbalah from Rabbi Gamliel Azokin that you're allowed to that you're, a woman's allowed to remarry based on one aid. Thus far, the Mishnah. The mission continues over there that when Rabbi Akiva came back and told Ram Gamliel, the Yavne, this is the grandson of Ram Gamliel HaZaken, then Ram Gamliel was very happy to hear this din, and then he remembered that he remembered an actual case where Ram Gamliel HaZaken was not here. Now, Nehemiah Ish Beis Dli had mentioned that the country is in an upheaval because of war. What does Nehemiah mean by pointing out that the country is all in confusion because of armies? Isn't it that he means to say, even though in this country there's war going on, nevertheless, I have a Kabbalah that even under the current circumstances, you can allow her to remarry based on one aid. Well, that would be a perfect proof that even in warfare, you do believe one aid. Because we say Milsa David Eloi Glory, that he's not going to say something that he might be exposed as a liar later. The answer is no. Amar Rava, Ihachi, Maishna Medina Zu. If that's what Nehemiah Ish Beis Dli means, then why is he mentioning this country is all in an uproar because of warfare, because of armies? What Nehemiah should have said is, you should know, the din is, any place where there's an upheaval because of war, you're allowed to. So I learned from Ram Gamliel. So no, that's not what he means. No, what Nehemiah basically means like this. When he's saying about the war, he's not saying, the war is not directly connected to the halacha he's saying. He's just saying like this. You know that this country is in an upheaval because there's armies, because of war going on. Therefore, I'm not able to leave my family and come personally to Eretz Yisrael to report to the Chachamim what I learned from Ram Gamliel. But you should, so I have to send the message through you. You should know what's the message. That you're allowed to have her remarried based on one aid. So the actual din that he's saying in the name of Ram Gamliel is not for time of warfare, it's for a time of peace. You can have her marry based on one aid. There's no proof from this Mishnah that in a time of warfare this din would hold. All he's saying is, because right now it's a time of war, I'm not able to go myself, so therefore I'm giving you this message to deliver to the Chacham. No. The word Mishubeshes, I mean, it doesn't mean there's a mistake in the Mishnayos. Mishubeshes Pagayasis means that the country is in an upheaval. But as far as your question, yeah, we have a lot of times the Gemara will say Chasuri Mechser, if there's a word missing in a Mishnah or whatever. Yeah, the text of the Mishnah nevertheless remains the same for a lot of reasons, one of which we've learned before, Mishnah Leizalzim HaMekayim. Once the Chachamim have gotten used to learning a Mishnah with certain wording, then they keep it that way. That's what we have the Gemara for, to explain when we follow the wording and when not. Yeah. Tashma, come, we can bring another proof. There were once two Talmid Chachamim who were traveling together with Abba Yosi ben Tzimoi on a ship. The ship sank. And Rebbe allowed the wives of these two Talmid Chachamim to remarry based on the aiders of women. There were women on the ship who survived the shipwreck. They came and said that they saw the bodies, as we're going to talk about in a minute. And Rebbe allowed on that basis the wives of these Talmid Chachamim to get remarried. Why are we mentioning him? I don't know. Maybe the women came and gave Eidos to Abba Yosi ben Simoy, and then on that basis, Rebbe accepted it. Or maybe it was, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, what they had to do was actually say Simonim on the bodies. So maybe Abba Yosi ben Simoy had to be there in order to verify that the Simonim, that they're giving a valid Simonim. I don't know. Anyway, now let's consider. Now, when people get drowned in a shipwreck, it's the equivalent of war, because just like in war, we're saying the people want to get away from there as fast as possible because they don't want to get killed by an arrow. Same thing over here. Everybody wants to get away as fast as possible so they don't drown. And the din is, when women give edus, even if you have 100, here we said you have two women, or I didn't say two women, just said women, plural, we don't know how many, but however many women there are, they're all considered in halacha the equivalent of one aid, which we're saying, normally you need two aidim for dinim in halacha, for it to prevent a woman from being an aguna, we accept one aid, we also accept nashim, but two women are not any stronger than one woman. It's always considered the equivalent of one aid. And the Chatani Hisi, and we say that Rebbe allowed the women to be the wives of these Tamil Chachamim to be married.
Yeah.
Therefore, going to show that if you have one aid in time of war, then you do accept it.
Because
Minat Torah, women are possible for aidos anyway. Altogether, it's only in a case like this that we make or when we accept the aidos of women. So once we do, then two women are not any stronger than one. Minat Torah, they're all possible anyway. It's only Midrabanan that we're declaring them kosher for this purpose. So in that case, one woman is the equivalent of one aid. Two women are also the equivalent of one aid. However many women there are, we're still not going to have aidos which is acceptable on a Minat Torah level. That's what we mean. The last two lines of him. Okay, so therefore you seem to have a proof that yes, in a time of war, you can accept one aid, or in this case, two women. Well, back to Tisfura. How could you think that's the situation we're talking about over here? We have to consider. Now, at this point, by the way, I just mentioned that the case was that they said Simonim. At this point, actually, the Gemara doesn't know that yet. At this point, the Gemara doesn't know that yet. The assumption we have at this point is that the women just gave aiders that these two guys did not survive the shipwreck. But afterwards, a bunch of us got onto a lifeboat, made it to safety, and those two guys didn't. So presumably they drowned. And we're saying that, so the question is, you can't say that, because after all, mayim she'en lahem sof ninu, because this is a case of water that's endless. Well, mayim she'en lahem sof ishtei asura, and water which is endless, we know if a person drowns in it, his wife is also. What do we mean by water that's endless? We're going to talk about primarily in the next paragraph. But basically, the definition of it is, if you can't see all the sides of it. If you have, for example, a person drowns in has gone missing in a lake, let's say, and you can see all the banks of the lake from where you're standing, then fine, that can be aiders. As long as you wait long enough that the person could not possibly have survived underwater, then you know he's dead, because if he had gotten out, you would have seen. But if, for example, a person drowns in an ocean or a large lake where you can't see all the sides, you don't know for sure. Maybe he managed to swim and get out someplace that's outside of your vision, and you can't necessarily rely on that. This comes up. There's many cases, and in all the Shilas and Trovas literature are full of cases like that where a person went missing in a river or in a river or an ocean, or there's an interesting Trova from a Rav in I think Burlington, Vermont, about somebody who went missing from the Titanic, and he has a whole long Trova about whether his wife is allowed to be married. But that's a classic case of Mayim Shein Lam Saif. You never know. On the face of it, you never know. The person might have managed to make it to safety.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually in that particular trova, he ends up bringing various reasons to be master the wife. One of them being that one of them being basically that with the thing made such headlines. Every survivor, every survivor they found made headlines. That if the guy had survived and been picked up by another boat, everybody would know about it. The Gemara mentions a similar concept later on. That Tamar Chachamim, wherever they wind up, becomes well known.
Right.
So therefore, there's less of an issue that we say they're missing and nobody knows what happened to them. Anyway, but you have all kinds of such cases in the halacha literature. So, in any case, the point is, if these women were just saying eidos that we made it out of the shipwreck and those two guys didn't, without actually having seen any bodies, of course we wouldn't be matter their wives to be married. You never know. They might have actually managed to get out. They might have managed to swim and get out of the water someplace else. Right. Ella, hechidami, so no, what must be the case we're talking about over here? The Amri Askinu come on, that the women are actually saying they brought up the bodies in front of us. The Chazinu La'alser, and they saw them right away. Why right away? The point is that if it wasn't so Tosfos explains over there that La'alter means if they had stayed, that it's not. We don't mean it had to be right away because after a while they're not going to be recognizable. The Gemara explains later in the next parak, towards the end of the Masechta, that actually the water tends to prevent unless the person has a wound, the body tends to preserve the water tends to preserve the body for a while. The point is, though, that they had to, the altar over here, Tosfos says, means right after the bodies were brought out of the water, they saw them. Because otherwise, once they're schlepped out of the water, then they start swelling up, and after a while, the features change.
Yeah. This is a lake ocean.
This is an ocean. Or the Mediterranean,
now,
whatever it was.
Based on the story, what happened with the plane that fell down the thing because of salt water, the bodies are hard to recognize.
So what the Gemara explains later is, as long as the bodies are in the water, they get reasonably well preserved.
Uh-huh.
But once they're fished out of the water, they start changing, they start swelling and changing very rapidly. That's what we mean by alter over here. They have to see them right away. V'ka'amri simonin, and they say that there was simonim on the bodies. So therefore, v'lava layusam chinen, ala simonim. So then we're not really relying on their aegis anyway. We're relying on the simonim. So there's no proof from that for a case of war where the aid is not necessarily saying, I recovered a body. Or even if he is, it might be a different body in the heat of things. In the case of war, the aid is not coming and saying, I know that I saw, for example, a mole on such and such a part of his body or whatever. He's just saying, I saw the guy and I recognized him in a general way, like you recognize a friend of yours. But, is there any specific feature that I could point to? No, that's called Tvias Ayin. Here, it wasn't a matter of Tvias Ayin. These women gave an actual simen on the bodies. That's different.
Exactly speaking, if someone came to give witness, he's not the partial witness, but he says, I saw this and this sign, and that's the only way you could have known that he saw him, that's good.
Yeah, well, there's an issue, what kind of simonim are we talking about? We're going to learn in a few days in the next perek. Tosfos mentions over here briefly. There's different kinds of simonim. There's simonim that are unique to a person or to an object. Yeah, and then you have simonim that are more general. Let's say for example, you could have a simon, for example, that the guy had blue eyes. Okay, but a lot of people have blue eyes,
Yeah.
As opposed to, for example, you say that.
Off on his back.
Yeah, let's say.
Usually not visible.
Okay, yeah, but not, yeah, the question is basically how common this particular kind of thing is, yeah.
Right.
Also true, right? Yeah, so the question would be, we'll learn in the next parak a bit of a sugya about, for example, moles, whether they're considered a simon mubak or not. Is there a possibility that maybe they change in appearance after the person dies? Yeah. Anyway, the point is that the point is, getting back to our Gemara over here, it's not a question of just relying on the women's aegis. I mean, we are. They're saying simonim, but we're relying on the simonim. So that's already acceptable. Yes, in warfare or in wartime also, if an aide, or the woman herself maybe, comes and says that I found a body on the battlefield that had such and such simonim, fine, as long as there's simonim of Hakim, we'd accept it. But if they're just saying, yeah, I recognize this guy, his name is Yankel Ben Shmerel, but is there any specific simon that I could give? No. How do you know? Maybe in the confusion, you thought it was Yankel and really it was somebody else.
And the bodies got so disfigured that we may have them. We have to kind of identify them. We have to rely on the word.
In this case, you're talking about in this case with the drowning? No, so that's the thing. So once they got the bodies out of the water, as long as, like Tosfos is saying, they looked at them right away, then they haven't gotten disfigured yet. Now, it is true. Some of the Mepharshim point out that the altar business has to be that they got them out of the water fairly soon afterwards. Otherwise, not necessarily are they the same bodies. Sigmar gives a similar case involving simonim, which will bear on our case over here. Havu gavra de'afkid shumshime gavichavre, a certain person left as a deposit sesame seeds by somebody else. Later on, amalei havli shumshime, he says, give me my sesame seeds back. Amalei shikotinu, he says, you already took them back. The mafkid says, v'kein v'kein havyan of a chavisa ramyan. He says, but it was such and such an amount, and it was in a barrel, and I can see, you still have that barrel by you, and if you check it, you'll find it has exactly that amount of sesame seeds in it. Amalei, so the nifka tells him, the shomer tells him still, didach shkaltinu, you already took yours, v'hani achrininu, what I have over there in the barrel is my own sesame seeds. It's mine, it's not yours. So, Rav Chista thought to say that that's the same as our case of the two Tamar Chachamim who drowned. where we don't say that maybe the two of them, the bodies got somewhere else, or maybe even that they got out alive, because it's Naim Shein Lam Seif, and that the bodies that we found are other ones. Again, Rav Chisda is assuming, not like we just said, that the case was that the women gave simonim on it. The Rav Chisda assumed that the women just gave eidos, we fished two bodies out of the water, and so we assume that they're them. And if we're saying that we're allowed, that they're women, that their wives are allowed to be married, meaning we say, since a ship sank over here and two people were missing, and we found two bodies, we assume it's the same ones. So by the same token here with the sesame seeds, yes, we should assume they're the same ones. But Amalei Rava, Midomi, how could you compare it? Hasan Tami Simonim. In that case, we just said that it wasn't just that they said we fished two bodies out of the water, they're probably the same ones. They gave actual simonim on them. Hacha shumshim amai simonim yislahu. Here, what kind of simon, what kind of simon can you have on the sesame seeds? Which Tosfos points out, you could say there's a simon in the fact that the person says it was so and so much, it was a pound of sesame seeds. You could say it happens that the shomer happens to have the same amount of sesame seeds. It's not really a simon. And Tosfos points out, usually we do say in Eila Matzias, we say that the amount of something is a simon. The difference is that over here it's very likely that people keep sesame seeds in standard size containers. So yes, a standard container of them is usually going to contain the same amount, so it's not really a simon. Tosfos also points out, by the way, that the case has to be over here, in this case of the sesame seeds, it has to be that he gave him the pikadon with Edim. Otherwise, if he gave it to him not in the presence of Edim, then the guy doesn't have to claim that you took yours and these are others. He anyway is able to claim with a migui, I bought them from you. Because the masket has no particular evidence that it ever belonged to him in the first place. So therefore, since the shomer is able to claim in Beis Din, I bought them from you, therefore he's also able to claim that you took yours back and these are mine. Anyway. Okay, so the assumption is, so far, that, now remember, the barrel itself would have a simon on it also. The assumption is that we're assuming that the masked might have taken his sesame seeds back, put them into his own container, left the container with the balabas, with the shomer, and now the shomer filled it with his own sesame seeds, or at least that's what he's claiming. So now the question is can we assume that? Do we really have a concern that he might have emptied them out? Given that you have the original barrel over here, why should we assume he emptied them out? Shouldn't we assume it still has the same contents? Well, it's not, but we learn in a Mishnah, Motzakli, if a person finds a keli with food in it, the kosovol of kuf, and there's a kuf written on the keli, then we have to assume the contents of it are carbon, meaning hektish. Mem means meiser. Dalud means dimua, where we have truma mixed with cholin. The Mishnah over there actually has a different girsa that the girsa is dmai. It's stuff where if you're not sure if maiser was taken from it. Test means tevel. Tof means truma. Shabashas, why would they write only an initial? Shabashas, sakana, how you kosvin tof tachas truma. Because in times of danger, when the goyim outlawed mitzvahs, people didn't feel safe writing on a container, for example, truma outright. So they'd write tof, standing for the word truma, and similarly with all the others. So why are we mentioning only truma? The Aruch Haner has an interesting vort on it. He quotes from a Yerushalmi that actually sometimes they would use the word test to represent truma, because test means toiv, the best, which is what's supposed to be given as truma. But b'shas ha'sakana, in a time of danger, when other people are going to be seeing this keli as well, and they may not know your private code, then they would dafka write tough, where then unambiguously everybody knows it means truma. Anyway, the point is, the point is if you find this keli with a tuff on it, you have to assume that the contents of it are truma. You don't assume maybe he emptied out the container and put something else. No, you have to assume it's truma or demai or whatever the other things are. So we see that you assume the original contents of the container are still in it. Shouldn't you do the same thing over here? And Tosfos asks the question, so what? I mean, we're talking about dinim mominus versus we're talking about Issa v'heter. Maybe we should be machmir when it comes to Issa v'heter, and dinim mominus is another matter. The prisoners themselves gives the answer. Still, it's very common to empty out containers, so therefore we should assume there's a similarity. Tosfos is trying to explain the different part. One of the things we just said is tes means that it stands for kevel. There could come out a kula from that. You could have, the, if you say that you're saying that you assume the contents of this keli are tevel, therefore you're able to declare them truma and maisa on behalf of other food. Which, if it turns out it's not, if it turns out that it's not tevel, that it's already chulin, whether it's truma and maisa has been taken out, then you have a problem. The fact that we're allowing it shows that we allow it even the kula. Tevel is fruit that truma and maisa hasn't been taken from. Okay, so let's ask the question backwards. Makshisha is asking you, what makes you? Why are we assuming that the contents of the barrel might be different? That might be the other guy's sesame seeds rather than the original guy's. Based on that Mishnah, you have from the next part of the Mishnah proof that it's not. That you do assume it has the same contents because Amos says. So look at the next part of the Mishnah. Rabbi Yosi, I mean, lots of chavis because of a loud truma. Even if you find a barrel that says the whole word truma, not just an initial, harei lechulin. Nevertheless, you can say that the contents are chulin. Shani Omer, Shtakad Hayu have a molly truma, because we can figure that last year it contained truma, opina, and he emptied it out. And the halacha is like Rabbi Yosi. So on the contrary, we do assume that that containers are regularly emptied and not necessarily refilled with the same kind of stuff. So why would we even think to say in the case of the sesame seeds that the masjid even has a case over here? Shouldn't we logically assume? Yeah, if he doesn't have, even according to Rav Chisda, if he doesn't have any simanim, why should we assume it's his sesame seeds? It's more logical to assume that it was emptied out and refilled. Ella, no. Dekula alma chayshin and shemapinam. No, the truth is everybody, both the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi in that Mishnah, might agree that it's usual to empty out containers. V'hacha v'hacha mefligi. But no, in that case, the machlokes is as follows. Mar savar im isa de pino michbar havakafar. The Tanakama figures, if you put stuff into the container that's not the same as the original, you would wipe off the letter on there. If you had a keli that said tough on it originally because it contained truma, and you emptied out the truma and put in chulin, you would rub out the tough so that people don't think it's truma by mistake. Or you yourself don't get mixed up and think it's truma. The fact that it still has the tough on it shows that it still has the same contents. Umar Sover, V'idach and Rabbi Yosi counters that because he says Emo Shtaluye Shtali. First of all, you could figure that maybe he forgot to take off the label. Inami Lepanchiyer Shavke, or he might have deliberately left it on there for protection. You want, for example, let's say there's chulin in there, but you leave the tough label on there because you dafka want people to think it's truma, so they don't touch it. Whereas in our case with the sesame seeds, there's no reason to assume any such thing. And therefore, it's more logical to assume that, yes, the guy emptied it out, returned the sesame seeds to the original owner, and what's in there now is his own sesame seeds, and so he doesn't have to return them.
What's the bottom line with the money?
So as far as that, what we said, since we established that if it was Mayim Shein Lam Seif, nothing short of Simonim would do, and that was the case for you, it was Mayim Shein Lam Seif, because they drowned in the Mediterranean or whatever it was, which is Mayim Shein Lam Seif, you can't see all the banks of it. From wherever you're standing. Therefore, necessarily, in order that if we said that Rebbe was mafka their wives to remarry, it has to be that the bodies were actually fished out of the water and they gave some money. So therefore, we don't really have an answer to our original question about whether one aid is acceptable in wartime, and the Gemara is leaving it unresolved. The Rif nevertheless ends up paskening that you do believe one aid even in wartime, because he says based on a Gemara later on towards the end of the Masechta, we have evidence that's allowed. But other Rishonim disagree with that. It ends up being a Machlokes in Shulchan Aruch whether you can accept one aid in wartime if he's not. Again, we're talking about if he's not giving some money, if he's just giving Tzvias Ayin. I recognize this. I found the body and I recognize the guy. Do we accept that or not? As opposed to if he gives specific simanim, which actually match the guy's dental records or whatever, that's different. The Gemara tells the case. Yitzchok Resh Galusa, Bar Achse de Rabibi, Yitzchok Resh Galusa was the nephew of Rabibi. Bar Achse de Rabibi. Havaka also mi Kurtova la Aspamia. He was traveling from Kurtova to Aspamia. Now, what are those? Some people want to argue, given that the man was called Resh Galusa, which the Resh Galusa is the political head of the Jews of Babel, but they want to argue that Kurtzvar and Astamia are both places fairly near Babel. On the other hand, the Rishonim from Spain had a Kabbalah that Kurtzvar and Astamia are actually places in Spain. Astamia is the normal name for Spain throughout Shas. Kurtzvar is Cordova, the capital of Spain. So in that case, he may be a Resh Galusa, but he's traveling around in Spain. No, Cordova is in Spain, actually. Not necessarily, no. No. So the real question is, what's a Resh Galusa from Babel doing traveling around in Spain? So there's a lot of different explanations about that. The Rosh explains that he wasn't really the Resh Galusa. Resh Galusa was just his family name.
He was from the
Resh Galusa's family, maybe. Not that he personally was the Resh Galusa. Other people argue that maybe he was the local Resh Galusa, just like he had a national Resh Galusa in Babel. Maybe he had local Resh Galusa in various Jewish communities, including one in Spain. But Rav Shmuel HaNogid and Rav Yehuda and Rav Yehuda Barceloni and some other Rishonim, by the way, bring that they had the Kabbalah that this Yitzchak Resh Galusa actually taught them the Gemara. He lived in the time of the Gemara, so it wasn't fully developed yet, but he taught them what was being discussed and what was being developed in the Gemara in his times. And therefore, a lot of the fact that in later times the Jews of Spain knew the Gemara and knew Halacha and were experts in it came partly based on the Yitzchak Resh Galusa. The Four Captives is much later. That's hundreds of years later. Anyway, so he was traveling from Kurtzvar to Astamia, Meshachim, and he passed away. Shochem Ehasam, so they sent a message to Babel, Yitzchak Resh Galusa ba'achse de Rabibi habaka ozo mikurtzvar la'Astamia Meshachim, that this Yitzchak Resh Galusa, the nephew of Rabibi, was traveling from Kurtzvar to Astamia, and he passed away. Now the question becomes, Michashin l'tere Yitzchak Eloi, do we have to be concerned that there might be two Yitzchaks or not? Can we allow this Yitzchak Resh Galusa's wife to remarry based on this Eidus, or maybe not. Maybe there's another Yitzchak Resh Galusa, which Mefarshim have a field day discussing. I mean, if they gave all those details, you know, is that really going to be a problem? So the Al-Sheikh has a tshuva on it where he explains that, no, they're not actually asking about this specific case. Yeah, there's no question if they said Yitzchak Resh Galusa, the nephew of Rabibi, obviously there's not another person like that in the world. No, the question, it's a more general question. If you get Eidus that says that Shmerel ben Beryl, and there's actually the tshuva from the Tzemachedik about such a person, that Shmerel ben Beryl died, do you have to be concerned that there might be another Shmerel ben Beryl out there? That's his explanation. The Aruch HaNer explains a little differently. They didn't send all the details. They didn't say Yitzchak Resh Galusa, the nephew of Rabibi. They just said Yitzchak Resh Galusa. So then you have the possibility that maybe there's another Yitzchak Resh Galusa out there. Anyway, so do we have to be concerned about that? Abaya Amal Chayshin and Rava Amal Lay Chayshin. And so Abaya says, yes, we do have to be concerned about that. Rava says, we don't. And Rashi, by the way, points out that we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow, that if we know for sure that in a certain city there are two people with the same name, then yes, of course you have to be Chayshish. If we knew that there are two Yitzchak Resh Galusas in a certain city, yes, there's no question if we get Eidus that one of them died, we have to know which one. Here, we don't have such a Chazaka necessarily. So that's the question. Do we still have to be concerned about it? Amar Abaye Menamin Alas. Abaye says, where do I get this idea that you have to be concerned about such a thing? Dahu Gita, because there was a certain case of a get, the Ishtakach bin Hardah, which was found, this get was found, when somebody lost it, and it was found in Hardah, the Ksiv, and it said in the get as follows, Bitsad Klunya Masa, next to the city of Klunya, or many Rishonim explain, it doesn't mean next to, because you don't write a get next to a city, you have to write the city where you're in. Bad Klunya Masa, actually, according to them, means the side of the city of Nahada, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, which is called Klunya. So it would be like nowadays, you say, you know, I live in New York City, in the borough of Brooklyn. In those days, you know, I live in Nahada, on the side of the city called Klunya. Anyway. I, Andruli Noi, from Nahada. The Rosh has a different gear, so not Andruli Noi, but that the man's name was David Bar Nehiloi, which, by the way, according to that, this is the only person in all of Shas named David.
David?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway. Ptaris v'trachis yas plenis insi. I've divorced and sent away so-and-so my wife. That's what it said in the Gitt. The Shocha avur de Shmuel akamei de Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya. So the father of Shmuel, who was the Rav of Nahada, sent the question to Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya in Eretz Yisrael. What should we do? Can we assume that it can we assume that what if there's another what if there's another person with the same name? And Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya told him, Tibodik Nahauda Akula. Yes, you do have to check the entire Nahauda. If there's another Andrew Linoi or David Bar Nihiloi, whatever, then yes, there might be a problem. But if not, then it's kosher to get. You can assume the one Andrew Linoi that we know about is the one who wrote this get. So by the same token, then Abaya said, given that we don't know for sure that there are two Andrew Linois, then we're good. Once we check out, What is Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya saying? You have to check it out. Even though we don't know for sure, we've never heard of another person in the city with this name, you still have to check out to make sure that there isn't another one. By the same token, with Yitzchak Reish Galosa, yes, you have to check and make sure there isn't another one. The Rava Omer, whereas Rava would counter to that, he would say no. In Issa, if that's correct, then it's not just in the Hauda. You bought it, Kol Olam, Yibarilites. Then the Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya should have to tell him, you have to check the entire world. What if, fine, right now there's only one Andrew Linoi living in the Hauda. What if beforehand there was somebody else of the same name living there, and he moved someplace else? And yet, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya is not telling him that. So obviously you have to say, why did Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya B'chlal send such a message to Avur D'Shmuel? Technically, you don't really need to check at all, Rava's saying. Technically, we can assume there's the one Andrew Linoi that we know, that we find in the Tzach list. That's all we need to be worried about. But for the sake of Avur D'Shmuel's covered, in order that, you know, that you don't want him to think, you know, I sent such a silly Shiloh, why did I even bother? So therefore, out of respect for him, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya says, you know what, if you think there's reason to be concerned, then check it now, though. But really, Rava's saying, really, you shouldn't have to check at all. We go according to who we know is there. So by the same logic, we only know of there being one Yitzchak Reish Galosa, so therefore we can assume that the one in the report from Kortova is the one. That was the point. In other words, that we know whoever has a chazaka of living in the city is who we have to be concerned about, but we don't have to be concerned that maybe somebody just moved in or maybe somebody moved out or whatever. According to Rav, we don't have to be worried about that kind of thing unless we have a chazaka that there's two. The classic cases Yosef and Shimon in one city, which then if we find a get that says Yosef and Shimon, we have to be concerned that which we don't know which one it came from, but otherwise we don't have to worry about that. And we'll continue tomorrow with Rava's Shita about that, where Rava proves his point that from this story, we don't really have a proof one way or the other. Rava is arguing that you can understand Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya's answer this way, but not necessarily doesn't mean that. Could mean like Abaya says. Tomorrow, Rava will point out a proof of his own to prove that you definitely don't have to worry about it. If there's no chazaka of somebody else having the same name, you definitely don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.